I guess.
What did we say? So what was one we did with Jesse on here? It was tell me a joke about a prog rock band. Okay, so this will be the last thing we do here. Why did the prog rock band break up? Because they couldn't agree on the time signature. That wow. Sucks.
That's,
Did you reach out to me on Instagram, I think?
I did, yeah. I've been like following you like for a while.
Like Everforthright a while?
Yeah, exactly. Because I was like still in like high school at the time.
And, yeah, like, I'm finding a lot of that. I'm like realizing that a lot of people discovered Everforthright when they were 15.
Yeah, years old. I'm 27. But I, in high school especially, I kind of mentioned it the other day because like I was like a big like Cynic fan. You know, like I was into like Atheists. I was into like all the like jazz, metal, whatever you want to call it. Cause like I was like heavy into that. And then I found you guys and that was kind of like, that was different for me because, your guys' stuff was like, obviously like it was heavy, heavy. It was like more like a Whitechapel. Yeah, it was. Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, no, I freaking loved your band back in the day, man.
So yeah, I was then stalking you a little bit, and I saw you're in a band, Wolf and Bear, and I checked out some of the stuff. And you guys are great. You've always been in that band?
Yeah. So I joined the band in like 2014, and that was kind of where we took off. They had previous members before, but I joined the same time.
That's a long time ago.
I was in the band for a little bit and then I had to take some time off to focus on my own stuff and then I came back to the band. But I've always just kind of been in the background. Always just kind of but yeah, we've been
if you don't mind me asking, like focusing on your own stuff, like is there anything? Cause I did the same thing. I had to focus on, I think at some point, a lot of guitar players or musicians have to do that at one time or another, just be like, shit, this is not working right now. Let me take a little time off and come back to it. Or social media breaks or something. Well, that's more of a newer thing, a social media break. But
yeah,
like when I took time off, it was more like just more about a necessity. Like, I've told the story a bunch of times now, but maybe you've heard it, maybe you haven't, but, you know, Everforthright really never got like a big break. We were never reached out. We were never really approached by the same people that approached like Periphery and Animals as Leaders. We just didn't have those friends. So, we were never offered endorsements. To this day, I've never had an endorsement. I still pay for all my picks, all my strings, all my guitars, all my software. I've never had an endorsement. Well, that's a lie. Manus gave me a 2-year endorsement after I won that contest, but it was 50% off up to one guitar a year for 2 years. And I was like, I make $8 an hour working the cash register at Barnes & Noble. You think I'm going to buy a $4,000 guitar? It's like $2,000 is so much money for me.
I feel that. Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. So that's when I took that's when I took my break. I was like,
the thing is, you can easily get on Kiesel. I have like a small like ambassador like thing, but like they give me a good discount. But even then, like, I've been under contract for like 3 years now, and I've only bought one guitar because I'm so broke. You know, I'm just like, I mean, I like it. I even have it over here. Little plug.
I thought I saw you playing like a Hyperdrive or something.
Yeah, this is like the only nice guitar that I have. So
yeah, that's nice. They're great guitars. I love my Zeus.
Yeah, no, I really think you can get on like, I think like as you were saying, you said like or ever forthright never got like a break or whatever. And like, man, that the music thing, like it takes a very long time. Like Wolf and Bear, like my band, like we just started getting more opportunities in the last like 2 or 3 years. Like we've always been like we played a lot of local shows and like we had to obviously like work our way up, and knowing the right people does help, but also just like grinding it out, you know, because like me myself, I'm used to like just not making money off of music. Like it's just like in my nature because like I don't really think about it. I'm just like
You
I
just
do
do
it
it
because
for
I
the love of
enjoy
it.
it. Yeah, exactly. And like I've always told people like, yeah, man, like I've lost money playing music. We all lose, you know what I'm saying? Like, so it's
Well,
just
that's
part of,
interesting. That's interesting you're
yeah.
playing more shows now because your last single was 2020 and your last full-length album was 2017. But I
And
mean, then this is not something unheard of. I've seen this before. So I just find that kind of interesting.
that's another conversation to have too, because like I think a lot of bands or artists, like they make that mistake of like they feel like they have to release albums all the time. And I think albums are great. I think the format has changed over the years. I think like obviously like in the early 2000s, like you had to have a full length. It was like that was the staple. Like, you know, like when System of a Down came out, it was like boom. Like, but I think we've kind of strived, or we thrived off of just like just milking the crap out of like just the singles and the EP. And I know that sounds like has like a negative connotation, but like
I
I
don't
think
think
that's
so.
like the best. Yeah, like you like. And I mean the best way to put it very simply is just like quality over quantity, you know.
Yeah, I mean that's what I've been doing with my latest EP, just one single at a time, every few weeks put out a new one. Now I'm out of singles though, so I got to write something new, but
I was just listening to your little your EP, man. It was really cool. I really like the strike or whatever.
Thanks. Yeah, that's the newest one. Are you guys, so it took you some time to get some good shows. You were doing mostly local shows for a little while. You got some cool shots of like, looks like some big tours that you've done in the past. So with Animals as Leaders and playing some pretty large venues. How does that come about?
Yeah, it's just a matter of we got really lucky actually. So the last tour we were on, it was a Dance Gavin Dance headliner, and we know those guys personally. Like they're actually from Sacramento, California, which is like kind of our neck of the woods or whatever you want to call it.
That's a good band.
Yeah, and then the bass player, his name is Tim. He actually played in our band, so we just had that connect already on lock. And then when COVID happened, that tour specifically, the last tour that we did, the Afterburner tour, like it was postponed so many times. Like we weren't even initially booked for that, and then all
What year
this
was
COVID,
that?
2021.
I see. So it was trying to come out of COVID.
Yeah, so originally actually it was Animals was on that, and then Issues was on that originally, and then obviously a lot of stuff changed since then. Animals couldn't do it anymore, so Polyphia hopped on. Issues had issues. respectfully. And it just made sense. And then our boy Tim, our bass player who played in DGD, just kind of plugged us and was like, hey, like let's get Wolf and Bear on this. And so that was like our biggest break so far. Like that was a big jump for us.
Nice.
We've done some like similar level, but not to that caliber.
Yeah. So when you guys play locally, is it like a big deal? Do people come out and you have a pretty good show or?
Yeah, it's really, yeah, it's for us, like we have, I feel like we build our fan base just off of like our friends and like our homies, and they would all come out, and then eventually like new people would tag along, and people that would find us like on the internet, or you know, through this like community called the Swan Core community. It's like, I'm not sure if you're familiar with that, but
I recently just heard that for the first time. What is that in reference to?
So it's so the guitar player for Dance Gavin Dance, he established this like post-hardcore sound, and his last name is Swan. So but it's funny because like those are our homies, and like it's kind of like free, it's like it's very similar to like Gent, you know, like it's not really a genre, it's just like a community and a word, and we don't really classify ourselves as Swancore or anything, but there's like this community, and it's really cool. We've definitely thrived through this little like niche world of like, it's really interesting because you have the people that, you know, all the like, you know, the screamo kids that listen to like, you know, Dance Gamma Dance, the Skylit Drive and Chiodos and stuff like that. And it's like meshing into this world of like prog rock. And like, that's kind of where we sit, because we're like on paper, like I would consider us like a prog rock band, but most, I feel like more casual listeners are like finding us, and like, I don't know, it's giving us an outlet to like be weird, but like, I don't know, it's really interesting.
Yeah. And that's something I've been thinking about a lot lately is how do I kind of widen the kind of music that I'm writing, but also still enjoy it? Because I want to, the whole point of this is I want to enjoy it and have fun, but it's also kind of shitty when you write something and only a handful of people want to listen to it. Like you want to see more, you know, girls listening to your music. You want to see older people listening to your music. You want to see younger people listening to your music. Whereas all the music I'm writing is like Instagram might as well have a like conservatory musician demographic, and my demographic could be, you know, men between the ages of 18 and 24 and are in conservatories is 100% of your audience. It's like fantastic.
Hey, you just have to put some like lo-fi beats in the back of your, like, you know what I'm saying? Like just like use hella reverb and like, I don't know.
Yeah. But yeah. Well, I've never enjoyed like the super guitar nerdy scene. Like I like good songs. Like
me too.
The music I write is, to me, it's fun. It'll make you think a little bit. It's experimental, but at the end of the day, it's a listenable song, and not as listenable as like what you guys are writing, but it is to me in the realm of a listenable song. What I don't like is like the guitar nerd stuff. I will not subscribe to the guitar nerd thing. Like I just don't play like that. I don't listen to it. I don't particularly like it.
I'm in the same boat, because although my roots are in that guitar nerdy stuff, it's just like, and I tell this to people all the time, because like a lot of like fans or whatever like ask me about like, oh, who do you listen to, and they expect an answer like you know, and no disrespect, I'm not, you know, I'm just saying like, they'll say like, oh, do you listen to like Intervals? Do you listen to Pliny and all this stuff? I'm like, they're great. I love Aaron Marshall. Like, I think he's a great player and stuff like that. And I don't listen to any guitar music like at all. Yeah. Like I listen to a lot of R&B and like electronic stuff. And, but my roots definitely like stem from like jazz fusion, like, you know, like Greg Howe and Holdsworth and Sean Lane, all those like crazy guys.
Same to a degree. Like I don't really listen to guitar music, but I listen to a lot of jazz and I listen to a lot of heavy music. Like I still, there is still some place in my heart for like really, really heavy stuff.
Yeah.
And so when that comes together, it'll often come across as, you know, guitar nerdy music or guitar music, because I don't write vocals, but you know, to, in my own head, at least it isn't that, but I guess it doesn't matter what I think.
You know? Yeah, I do appreciate where we're at, because like we can get away with like more technical noodly guitar playing, but still like I'm not there, like I'm not at least with this new stuff, I kind of just let all the noodles out. I kind of just like, okay, let me just get all this stuff out. And then
new stuff that I haven't heard yet that you just sent me.
Yeah. So this new, yeah, exactly. This new album that's coming out this year. I even told, Tim, our bass player, I was like, I need to just get all the noodles out and then I can, cause like, I think this album, there's some new stuff on there, but like there's a lot of stuff that I've just had in my back pocket that I've had even from high school, you know. And but I tell this to people all the time, I'm like a songwriter at heart, you know. When I write music, I'm actually writing like everything. I'm writing, I'm thinking about the drums, I'm thinking about vocals and stuff like that. I'm mm-hmm. always learning. I feel like songwriting is always like a journey, and there's no like, it's kind of like tone chasing, you know, you're never like really satisfied and you're always progressing.
Yeah,
but like truly I'm like a songwriter at heart, so yeah, I don't really like, yeah, I can't even tell you the last, like me myself, I can't tell you the last band that I listened to.
Did you write most of the Wolf and Bear stuff?
Yeah, I would say so. I'm always writing, so I just have like collections of either demos or like just riffs in my camera roll, and like even just chord progressions.
So when you write, do you track it at home and then teach, and then the rest of the band kind of learns it? And I assume your vocalist like puts his own vocals and lyrics on top of it.
Yeah, it's always different. Cause I used to like write in Guitar Pro. I used to
no way. Holy cow.
I used to like, what?
Oh, I would never do, like, I can't even conceive writing in Guitar Pro.
I was using it like a lot in high school to write, cause I didn't have like an interface to record. And I was like, well, I want to get my ideas out. And so like I got used to like tabbing things out, and with that you can like program drums, you could do bass and second guitar, and then I could send it to my guitar player and be like, okay, this is exactly what you play. And but I don't really do that anymore. Unless I'm like maybe like writing a solo or like figuring out harmonies and stuff like that. It really depends, but I mostly like sit in front of my computer with the guitar, and just like work it out.
I mean, no shade on that process. If that works for you or for someone, it just would, there's no way I could see that working.
I noticed too, like I can't do it anymore, because it's a different, like you get a different feeling live. Like when you play those songs, like I feel like, it doesn't always translate well live, and I've learned that over the years. Like when you start playing these like really intricate compositions, because like a lot of our stuff is like really syncopated. It's not always like straight like backbeat, you know. It's mm-hmm. very calculated, and although I love music like that, it doesn't always translate live. So I try to have a balance, because I like to write music with like heavy accents, like all the time. I like to write with intention. But like, if it's not like slamming live, then I'm like, so I sometimes like I water things down a tiny bit, but like, I mean, watered down sounds like a negative thing, but
No, I know what you mean though. You know, I actually did write a couple of her forthright songs on that first and only album on piano. And when I went to play them on the guitar, they were really uncomfortable fingerings, and we just kind of stuck it out. And to this day, like, they're not really guitar riffs. They're incredibly, incredibly difficult. Some of these riffs, like, can dispose of your optimism. There's like a lead melody somewhere in Lost in Our Escape that was written on piano that was like borderline impossible to play on the guitar. Screen Scenarios was written almost entirely on a piano, and those like fourth pentatonic lines on the guitar are an absolute nightmare.
Yeah.
So like when I started writing this newer music for myself, I pretty much write entirely on the guitar now, and like the thing has to feel good on my fingers. Like, it's got to snap. It's got to feel good on both my hands. Like, I need to know what's going to be picked versus what's going to be pulled off, you know? So yeah, a little different.
I relate to that heavy. And I like to write, it's funny when I track stuff or when I write guitar, I'm always thinking like, can I actually play this? Or like, can I actually like sit down and like maybe practice it enough to the point where like, yeah, I can get this down. And sometimes I'm like, yeah, there's no way I could do this. So like, I'll kind of like, you know, pull back a tiny bit. And cause like, man, my music is probably not as hard as your music, but like, I struggle with like, I tell this to people all the time, but like, our music is like challenging. And so like, I never can look cool on stage. I'm just like standing there like a jazz guitar. I'm no diss. I'm just saying like, guys tell me like, why don't you move around, much? I'm just like, well, I mean, I'm like focusing on so much. I'm also thinking about playing. I'm thinking about pickup selection. I'm also thinking about my patches. Cause like, I don't have, like, I run everything on my foot switch. So I still have to tap dance a tiny bit. Mm-hmm. And then obviously playing in front of a lot of people, I'm just like, there's so much going on. I just want to rock out, you know?
Yeah. Well, my music is actually not that hard. What's hard about my music is that there's a lot of improvising in this new stuff. So that's the hardest part, because those are difficult chord changes to play, but the actual riffs and melodies are sort of like the break between all that. It's like, okay, now you can have fun. Now you can have fun with this riff because you're not soloing. And there's a couple like really tricky unison melodies and stuff like that. But, you know, the real main tricky stuff is, okay, now you got to improvise in 11/8 over completely unrelated chords. That's the hard part.
That's fun too. I mean, in its own right, I really want to do more improv, because like, I'm not that bad at it. I'm not to the level of like doing 11/8. You know,
man, it's like anything else. Just gotta sit in your room with a metronome and do it until your eyes water. Like,
you know,
you know, ever since was it Malcolm Gladwell, the 10,000 hours book, or was it someone else? I don't think it was. Who wrote the 10,000 hours book? 10,000 hours book. You become what you practice. 10,000 hours. No, this wasn't Malcolm Gladwell. This was Phyllis Lane. We become masters of our own lives through long-term, step-by-step processes. There are simple practices for blah, blah, blah. So pretty much have you ever heard of this book?
Yeah, I have, actually.
Yeah, so it's like anyone who's a master of what they do, they've spent 10,000 hours doing it. So I think at some point when I was younger, definitely in high school, I thought, oh, in order to be like savant level good, you just have to be like a little bit weird and like, that's it. So if you commit, if you're just a little bit weird, then you should be able to get some sick message across in your music. And then I later realized, oh wait, I could be totally myself and just practice really hard and work really hard. And I think that's a better way to get what I want. So that definitely shifted in my head. So I don't know how I got here. If you want to shred 11/8, 10,000 hours, that's all you got to do.
Is that it?
Yeah.
Yeah, It's funny because like there's like an old like gospel drummer meme of just like, I forgot, some guy like made a video of him playing over like, he's like, okay, this is how you play Giant Steps. Like I think he played it like 13 over 8, and then like he's about to play it and he's like, I have to send the video, but I'm really bad at explaining, but like he just basically he was like, please don't play in 13 over 8, like at like, you know. But no, I in high school, like I very much had that mentality of like, I didn't really care about anything else. I just wanted to get like better at guitar, and my drive was like, I had like a little YouTube channel and I did like YouTube covers, and like the thing that drove me was like, man, I want to be better than these guys. And cause I didn't really have a lot of like guitar player friends to like compare myself to, or like to show riffs, or like, oh, I'm better than you. Like I was like the guitar guy at my school.
Yeah. But, did you go to a big school?
No, not really. No.
Yeah, let's talk about drive for a little bit. So drive is a weird thing because, you know, why we do things, whether it's for money or like a sense of purpose or a mixture of both. Or like leaving a legacy, like it changes all the time. It changes all the time for me. You know, again, having put down the guitar for a bunch of years, then coming back and writing some stuff. I think my drive at that point was, well, let me write the stuff that I've been wanting to write. Like, let me get out these ideas that I have. And that's it. That was my drive. It wasn't, let's see if we can do this bigger and better. Cause there was no bigger and better. It was ground zero. So let me just get these ideas out. Now that I've got those ideas out, now the tune is starting to change a little bit, and I'm thinking, all right, well, I'm trying to get some gigs. How do I get gigs? Why do I even want gigs? Well, I guess I want to play a gig because feels good to play music. Like, I've never been in the service industry. I've never liked serving people. I've never been like a waiter. I've never been, you know, oh, can I get you some more water? Can I get you some more french fries? Like, what can I do for you? I've never been a particularly nice guy either. I am a nice guy, but I've never been outwardly like,
yeah,
Tom, nice to see you. Oh,
my gosh. You don't like being fake.
I'm not like, I don't know if it's alpha. I'm not that kind of like loud kind of person. So I've never been... You know, no one has ever said Nick is a nice guy unless they've kind of spent a little bit of time with me and realized, oh, Nick is a pretty nice guy. But I'm not, I don't go out of my way to make it look like I'm a nice guy.
I got you.
If that's a.
No, I understand. You're just very, very introverted. You're very like neutral.
I'm just neutral. Yeah. Like there's two kinds of people at a party. There's the person that will introduce themselves and you're like, oh, like, you know, nice to meet you. And then there's the person that kind of hangs back and waits for someone to say hi to them.
They're passive.
Yeah. They could both be equally nice people. One person, they just have different approaches to whatever. Anyway, my point is that like, now that I'm thinking of playing shows, I'm like, wait, am I in the service industry all of a sudden?
I mean,
that's really what through my... That went through my head the other day.
Like, yeah. You're ultimately like trying to get some good tips, man. So
yeah, I gotta serve those pancakes, and
you gotta make them good too, because like otherwise people are not gonna come back. You know what I'm saying? So like you have to. I mean, you don't have to do anything, but I resonate with that heavy. It's ironically,
all my songs on my next whatever is going to be called like, can I refill your coffee? let me get you some more water. Can I top that off for you?
Yeah, top it off. I mean, no, I resonate with that heavy. I've been like an introvert my whole life. I was actually a lot worse. Like the fact that I'm doing this right now is like insane to me, because like I was very much like antisocial, and
it's probably wasn't good. Probably wasn't good for your band to be antisocial.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Like, I feel like, I feel like my other guys like carried a lot of the weight as far as like, you know, cause I was very much like, I play guitar. I'm, you know, I write the songs, but I'm not like, I'm, you know, it's funny.
Some people get away with doing that for an extended period of their career, but it more often than not, it's good to not do that.
Yeah, I mean, I've definitely branched out. I definitely like opened up over the last 2 years. And music actually helped me do that. Like playing shows and meeting people, like that took me out of my element. Like I was like touring.
You feel good about it? Like you like being out of the element?
I'm still in my bubble. I'm still like, you know, my threshold has definitely like gone up a tiny bit. Like
yeah, it's like taking off your astronaut helmet. It's like, oh shit, there's oxygen out here. It ain't right. So bad.
I'm still at my level, and I'm still very much like, I hope no one talks to me, but like respectfully, I'm just like, I'm not like that, but I used to be a lot. Yeah, it is like it's so like, again, like what helped me was playing music at a young age. Like I was fortunate enough to like tour in another band called Hotel Books when I was like 20 years old. And like my first like real big tour was like a full US, and like, and they were a band that was like already established. I was just kind of filling in, and that whole experience like opened the doors for me like socially, because I even remember like, man, I was so bad. It seemed like I was like a mean guy. It seemed like I was like, I didn't want to talk to anyone, because I didn't, but like just because of my own problems, not because of them.
I got a lot of that too, actually. But you know, there's the whole introvert versus extrovert thing. I've come to learn is it's not the same as being shy. Like being shy is being shy. Being an introvert, being an extrovert is a different thing. And what that comes down to is where you get your energy from. So introverts get their energy from being alone. Extroverts get their energy from being like out and gregarious. Like they recharge by being around people. Introverts recharge by being by themselves, getting away from people. So there was a famous talk show host, whoever the big famous one was before, Johnny Carson. Is that it? I think it was Johnny Carson. I love all the random shit that I barely fact check on here and just spiel out. I think it was Johnny Carson, who was like, you know, a talk show host in front of millions of people a night doing his thing, who was apparently an introvert who did a fantastic job as a talk show host, but that was his energy getting drained in his performance, and when the show was over, he needed to recharge, and so he would want to be by himself. He wasn't a dick by wanting to be like, look, like I gotta go be alone, but his introverted nature, that was the way he was going to recharge his batteries. So there is a way for introverts to be seemingly extroverted, but when it comes to recharge, it does boil down to you need to be by yourself.
Yeah, I've also noticed like for me, I'm very much in my bubble at the beginning of a tour. I'm just like, I hope no one talks to me respectfully. I'm just like, I don't know what to say half the time, but like, I'm always going to be nice to everyone. Obviously I love meeting fans and I love meeting new people. But I've noticed like if I'm on a tour, like towards the end of the tour, I feel much more open. I feel more like used to this grind of like networking and socializing. And you're like, yeah, I'll take a picture with you. Like whatever. But when I take time off in between, I go back to my normal self. It comes in waves for me. Like right now I'm in my like very timid like insecure, whatever. Cause like I haven't toured in like a few years. So like,
Oh really?
Yeah. It's been a minute for us. Cause like we've been focusing on the album and, mm-hmm. I'm trying to do more like session and like fill in work. But I haven't played a show in so long.
Yeah. I just played my first show in 10 years the other day.
Really? 10 years?
10 fucking years. Yeah.
How was that?
It was sick. I felt really good. I felt really good about it. It was just the right size. It was about 100 people or so. I opened up for this band called Bit Brigade and, they were on tour. This was in Long Island and, I had a handful of people there to see me specifically, but you know, I turned a lot of heads. Like people after the words were like, shit, what the fuck was that? And that felt good, you know?
That's awesome, man.
Yeah, it's been a long while. And the show I played before that was Euroblast in Germany for like 2,000 people. So it was a bit of a change.
Didn't you fill in for who was it?
Harp Machine.
It was a Harp. Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah, that was cool too. That was like every night was a couple hundred people. I don't think we ever played for 1,000. I think it was like a couple hundred people every night.
Yeah, because they were still like a relatively newer band at the time.
Yeah, well, Born of Osiris was headlining after the Burial was co-headlining. Monuments was just before them, and we were the openers to Heart Machine. So it was a pretty cool tour.
Oh wow!
But this is when After the Burial had like two albums out, and Born of Osiris. This was when Jason Richardson had just left the band.
Yeah.
So, and this is also, I think, probably one of the first couple tries all these bands had of playing in Europe, which is not an easy thing to do. To pick up and go to Europe as a US band is really tough.
Yeah, I haven't done that yet.
Oh, geez, it's
on my list.
Well, one thing I wanted to ask you, because you had mentioned playing local shows and focusing on local shows, then doing this tour. So give me some advice because I want to play more shows. I'm having a hard time like making, meeting the right people in like the Tri-State area to book some like decent gigs. I don't want to play like at a veterans, like a VFW hall, you know, like where it's like bring your own PA and I got to go to like Radio Shack and like, I don't want to do that. I want to play like the show I played the couple weeks ago was great. Like great sounding venue, nice big monitors. And that's the kind of music that I play. I still play heavy music. Like I'm still playing like heavy riffs, even though I'm improvising in between them. So I need that big sound system. But I'm realizing that like showing up to this gig and seeing that there was 10 people there for me was like, okay, cool. That's 10, but it's not 40. Like there's gotta be more people. I need more people to know who I am in my area. And I was thinking about like, oh, I could do like Instagram ads and like target the shit out of like the 25-mile radius that I'm in. Right. Just like everyone in this neighborhood and no one else in the world knows who I am, but like shit, like Westchester County, wherever I go, people are going to turn up.
I mean, shoot, man. It's definitely a grind. Like, it definitely takes time. And, like, I mean, you've been, like, I've known your name for a while. But, like, I mean, I feel like in this world of, you know, because, like, I feel like most kids that listen to like the proggy stuff, they'll listen to, you know, like Intervals, Pliny, even Polyphia, like that, you know, there's different spectrums and like the jazz, like metal, whatever you want to call it, is very niche. Mm-hmm. And I'm not saying that can't succeed because like there's bands like even like Periphery's like latest single has like a jazz interlude or whatever. Like Animals has like a whole following, you know. I think it's just like getting into that, just like, I don't know,
yeah,
picking away at that, it definitely, it just takes a lot of time, I guess. I don't know. Me personally, I don't have all the answers because, like, I don't even know how our band became, like, somewhat successful, to be honest. But, like, a lot of it was, like, we would just get all of our friends to come out because, like, we had to sell. So we play at the Boardwalk in Orangevale a lot, which is a really popular venue for upcoming bands. And, you know, we'd have to sell, like, pre-sale tickets. And like, it was, like, part of the process, part of the struggle of being, like, a small artist is, like, you still had to make money, you know, and for the promoter, for the rest of the bands and stuff like that. So yeah, it was very much like, so, like, all of us would just, like, chime in to, like, invite family, like, old high school friends, you know, like, anyone that we can get our hands on. And, like, but I don't know. I think obviously the internet helped us too. And I don't know. I think it's really just finding your audience.
Yeah, it's two different challenges, the internet thing versus a live show thing. Because it doesn't help me to have fans in Indonesia if I'm playing a show in Philly. You know, I need people in Philly. I need fans in Philly in order for people to come to a show in Philly.
I also, another conversation to have is, like, you see a lot of these, like, Instagram guitar players that obviously have great numbers on Instagram, whatever. And then you check their Spotify monthly listeners and it's, like, still under, you know, 1,000. And it's, like, it's crazy to me. Like, they'll have, like, a million followers on Instagram and, like, their music isn't really taking off because, like, most people just check out, you know, their little, like, 10-second videos and that's pretty much it. And
it's a different meal. Yeah. It's a different thing. Like, you know, scrolling Instagram and having your favorite Instagram guitar players is a different, has Tom Quayle ever released an album?
He has to have, right?
I don't think Tom Quayle discography.
He's like, he probably does, like, he probably has, like, Jam Central. What is that YouTube channel? I forgot. Because, like, Guthrie Govan only has technically one solo album. And look at him. I mean, he has his band and stuff, but...
Well, yeah, but then there's Aristocrats, right? Is that different?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, that's just, like... Yeah, but even then, like, they I think they only have, like, two albums or so. But, like, Guthrie Govan is also, like, one of my favorite guitar players as well. And, like, although I do love the Aristocrats, like, I'm always just, like, wanting that solo album, another solo album from him. But that's always interesting, too.
Yeah, I don't think Tom Quayle has an album. I mean, it's just an interesting fact. You know, people do whatever the heck you want. Like, if, like, the music is your own journey. But I just find it interesting that there's all different kind of flavors. Like, you could be the Instagram person. You could be and have shitty YouTube. I'm learning this because I'm, you know, putting out my singles and my like, I'll take the clip of the guitar solo from one of my new songs and put it as a reel on Instagram, and then I'll get like 60,000 views and reshared and all over the place. And the caption will say, you know, check out the music video, link in the bio. And the full music video will have like 500 views. Like, no one wants to watch the whole music video. They want to watch like the 60-second clip of only me playing the guitar solo.
Yeah.
You know, it's interesting.
You almost have to, like, it's a weird balancing act because for us, we had to like fight through, like, cause we didn't have like platforms like TikTok or Instagram at the time, or at least it wasn't as popping back in the day. Or even for me, like as a guitar player, like I was like making content on like YouTube, and like from there I found like Like, and when I say content, I mean like literally like a webcam, me playing some cool riff or something. Mm-hmm. But even through that, like I have like people that still follow me from that. But like, I think it's just like a different, obviously a different climate of, cause you know, like TikTok, like, I feel like a lot of artists thrive on that platform, and some of the numbers actually do translate to people going to shows just for that one TikTok song. Like Steve Lacy mm-hmm. has, his most popular track is, I mean, he was already established. He was already like playing for like Kendrick Lamar, but like when one of his songs, like,
I don't know who that is. Steve Lacy.
Yeah. He has a really popular song called Bad Habit.
Is he a guitar player? Is he like a rapper?
He's like a singer and he plays guitar. But he was like known for like demoing or recording songs on his like iPhone. And he used to make like these like Mac DeMarco tracks, but he got like, he was already like established, but like he got really famous over TikTok because of like one song, and like people will like come to his shows just for that one song, to the point where like he gets like pissed off and he starts making fun of him or whatever. And, or at least making fun of the situation, like, oh, like, you know,
that's all you can do.
Yeah. It's, so it's very interesting, but like, luckily, like,
wow. 131 in the whole world for listens, 131 in the whole world.
Yeah. It's actually a great song too.
Is that the one?
Yeah. He definitely deserves the praise. Like, I think on that album or on that song specifically, he has like, kind of reminds me of like Prince or something on the verses. Really cool style, but I feel like you almost have to work backwards though. I feel like you should have this established foundation, like where people like your music already, and then you can start building on it even more. Cause like, I think say like a band like Polyphia, was already established as a band in the internet world, I guess. People mm-hmm. were already listening to them, and then like this whole generation of, you know, TikToks and Reels and stuff like that, they thrived off of this whole new climate. And they've gotten even bigger than they were before because of it, because of the internet, because of all these platforms.
There's something stylistically in common with the bands that are really like hitting it these days. And I think it's something that your band also has an element of too. And that's that it's just fun. Like I don't see a need to like listen to like watch a whole YouTube video sometimes, or, but like I was clicking through some Wolf and Bear videos from your, like the live sessions at the
mm-hmm.
Post Cavern.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Post Cavern.
And they're good. There's a good ass songs. Like these are great. You guys sound so good. And you know, like,
Thanks, man. It's interesting. Like, and I'll say this again, like we're playing prog rock, you know what I'm saying? Like, and I feel like people don't even realize it, like, especially on like this newer stuff. Like there's like bridge sections that literally just sound like a Yes song, you know, from however long ago. But like, we kind of mesh it in because like our vocalist is more like modern and chill, and like, he kind of sounds like The Weeknd. And then like our scene, it welcomes like that kind of weird, vibey, you know, whatever you want to call it, intricate prog rock stuff. It's really interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. I guess like, as long as you have some elements rooted in what, like a lot of people could enjoy, like your singer. I don't think anyone could listen to your singer and say that he's not a good singer. He's a great singer. And like the mix is rooted in something familiar. It's not like it's not a confusing mix. Like you can hear everything. It sounds like a rock band mix. And then from there, you can kind of be free with the other elements to be a little bit more experimental with. Like, as long as you have like a mix, I'm also having like, this is, I'm thinking out loud here. I'm not saying this is like the way to do it, but it seems to me like as long as you have some key elements rooted, and I guess in like listenable, good music pop, you can be free with a chord progression because your singer is writing such good, clear, comfortable melodies, and you can be free with like the, you know, the drummer doing some wacky stuff. You can be free with odd time signatures because, you know, there's something else holding it in. And I, you know, and Chris was good at that too. I remember listening to when the old Ever Fourth Rate songs were instrumental, even, you know, even the new ones, even though it's not Chris on it, when these songs are instrumental, they sound like chaos. They sound, I remember like the Countershift and Little Albert Experiment. These songs have so many notes on them, or even Screen Scenarios. Screen Scenarios has so many notes. And when you listen to it on without vocals, it just sounds like
right.
It's all over the place. But then when you have like Chris singing these melodies that all kind of seem diatonic, and they're all almost like pentatonic, and it's almost like the rest is background noise, and all you care about now is, oh, okay, so here's the pulse, and here's the comfortable diatonic melody that I could sing along with. I don't really care what all the other shit's doing. It's cool that it's there, but
yeah, I've always wondered that too with like your guys' music. I'm like, how does like Chris write over this shit? It's like, I respectfully, because like I think, because like instrumentally, I'm like, even as like a musician, even as a guitar player, I'm like, sometimes I don't even know what's going on. I know there's like diminished lines in between, and some of the time signatures are really wacky, but I'm just like, how does he like manage to write these like catchy hooks over these crazy proggy lines and parts?
Yeah. Well, I think, well, Mike too, Mike Semesky had the same task in the new stuff. And I think it just comes, you know, like theory stuff helps, but I think it comes from just like, that's what a good vocalist does. Like they just know how to find, they know how to find the common ground with a listener and the wackiness. You know, like there could be like four back-to-back non-diatonic chords, and they'll find a way to like comfortably and sexily navigate those four chords. You know what I mean?
Yeah, honestly.
And as long as you could do that. Yeah,
that's kind of how we get away with like our music too, because our singer, shouts out to Marcus, if you're watching this, I mean, no disrespect, but he doesn't really know like music theory, or he like, it's funny, we found him at a local like open mic night kind of deal. Like he used to do like acoustic acoustic covers and like but like
that's what I was about to do for a while. I was like, guys, we can't find anyone to do vocals for this. Let's just go to like the school. Let's go to the school over here and check out the music program. Like there's got to be some good singers.
No, you're honestly like, you'd be surprised. You just have to have an ear for it. You have to, you know, but yeah, I feel like we do get away with a lot simply because our singer kind of not dumbs it down, but it makes it more comfortable.
You mean. That's totally not the right way to do it.
Yeah, because we can like, and especially for our scene, like bands like Dance Gavin Dance, or like maybe even like a Circus Survive, like the guitars are like still doing interesting stuff, and like everything's panned like hard left and right, just like any other like a metal record, and the guitars can do whatever they want essentially, but the vocal and maybe like the rhythm section is still holding it down as like you're still having the meat and potatoes of the song, like while you can do this crazy, you know, minor seven arpeggio or something. But
yeah, exactly.
I love our music so much because like I don't have to think too much when I write. I just write. Like sometimes I'll go a little crazy on the guitar. Sometimes like I'll hold back. Sometimes like it doesn't. And with styles too, like with our genre of music, we can like dive into anything because, you know, we can do the prog rock stuff. We can do the jazzy stuff. We can do the maybe a hip hop groove. We could do metal stuff. It's pop stuff. Like, there's, you know, it's very versatile. And I think that's why we thrive as a band, because like, we can do whatever we want. And like, there's no label on it. Like, we just have fun writing music that we like. And it's so liberating to just be like, not think about genres and like if I played in like a metal band, I'd be like, it's just too like, you know what I mean? Is this not heavy enough? Is this not like, is this too melodic? Or I don't know. That's a bad example, but.
Yeah, no, I know what you mean. Totally. Like all that stuff. Just having some kind of meat, like what you said, like the meat and potatoes is there, and then you can kind of feel free to do whatever you want. Yeah, and I'm thinking now of my wife got me watching this show. I think I mentioned this, Omar, on our chat with Jesse. Jesse Zaretti was on here last week with us, and I was watching Next in Fashion, and I was like, these people are so technically skilled, and I never really thought of fashion in this way, but I found a new appreciation for it in watching this show, because I was like, okay, these people have technical ability. They have like cultural and subculture knowledge of like whatever scene they're in. Like some people, like, you know, their specialty was clothes for men, clothes for women. Like hyper gay was like another guy's thing. Like he loved making like sexy male things. And another one was like this woman, she only did clothes for women. This other one only did clothes for men, like kind of like hip hop clothes for men. So they all kind of had their own thing, but they were all like wizards on like the sewing machine and understanding fabrics and how to cut a shirt to like perfectly fit someone's body. And I was like, man, these people are amazing. And the winner of the contest, they were going to get like, I don't know what the word is, signed to Rent the Runway, where they had to design a collection of clothes, like 9 different clothes for Rent the Runway. But it had to be something that was like, you know, something that was going to be tasteful and people might wear every day. But as part of the competition, they had to make more like runway style editorial outfits. Like, show me a Met Gala style gown that you would never, like, no one would ever actually wear. It's got some crazy headpiece on it. It's like got like a tail to it that's like 30 feet long that someone's got to hold. And I just thought, you know, this is really cool. These people, they got the technical chops. They can make the crazy editorial things that no one would actually wear. And then, you know, if they win, someone has instilled the confidence. They've instilled the confidence in someone to hire them to also do things that anyone might wear every day. And so it has me thinking about that for my own music. Like, okay, I've done the editorials, or as editorial as I think I could ever really get. Like, I've done the music specifically for the music nerds who study music, and that's it. Now I kind of want to work on like my target collection. I kind of want to see, what would a song come out like if I wanted it to be for a wider audience? Yeah, that's just kind of what I've been thinking a little bit. And I don't think that like diminishes the value of what I'm doing or anything. It's just, you know, another side of me as an artist.
I think you have all the tools to like succeed in this like music world. Like I honestly think like you should just get attached to like a, maybe on an endorsement, or like maybe do like be like a demo guy for a little bit. Weren't you doing like mayonnaise stuff or something?
I was for a bit. I wasn't enjoying it though. I'm more of a composer, writer. Like I like to make music. I don't really like demoing products.
I mean, same. I mean, I've never demoed myself, but I've noticed like a lot of the guys, for example, Brandon from Kiesel, he plays in a band called, he plays in a few bands, but he was known for like Eternity Forever and like Gold Necklace, really cool like R&B music. But I feel like he established his name a little bit more because like he was doing like demos for Kiesel, and like he was just like, everyone was like impressed by his playing. And honestly, like that's how I found like guys like Guthrie Govan, like him jamming to, I think it was called Jam Central or whatever. Like he'll just be improvising, either improvising or like he'll just play some originals that he had on his like solo album. But like he'll be like demoing out either a guitar or like whatever, or backing tracks and stuff like that. And like all of it really helps. And ultimately, like it's about the end product of like, yeah, I want to write music. I want people to listen to it. And like I've always struggled with that as well. And more so now, like I've definitely like been trying to put myself out there a little bit more than I used. Cause like friends tell me all the time, like, why don't you like post more? Why don't you like make content? Why don't you do this? And I'm just like, well, like, I just care about the music. I just care about writing music, playing.
It's exhausting coming up with like a month of content to post every day. It's really hard.
It's a lot of work. And at the same time, it's crazy to me because like guys are like doing so well just making 10 second clips.
Yeah.
And it's great. I think it's great. And I'm trying to get into that world a little bit more, but I just want to stand out a little bit. Like, I don't want to be another guitar shredder.
Yeah. You want to do your own thing. Yeah.
I want to write some like interesting stuff. Like even if, so like a good example for me is, I used to have, so when I had like, when I was active on my YouTube channel, which is, there's not much on there. Like when I say active, I just mean like I did it for fun, but like people liked it. And, but my point was I had this song called Poofy. It was just like a jazz, like a very basic, I only played guitar for like 3-4 years or something like that. And like, I wrote this like jazz piece and it was really cool and people liked it. And to the point where like people were like sending me videos of them playing it. And I was like, oh, wow, this is really cool. And like just from a YouTube video. So like I turned it into a song and it's going to be on this new album actually.
Nice.
But like, it's just crazy like what music can do. But yeah, I've always just thought like, yeah, I just care about the music a lot. I care about the music a lot more. But that being said, like, I feel like if I start to branch out, like I'm doing now, like I'm doing more like live streams.
I've been thinking about that too.
You should do that because
like Twitch wise.
Well, you can so the thing about Twitch is like, it can be great if you have the fan base for it. And, but even for anyone, like Twitch is like really hard. So like, I would just maybe start out on even just Instagram. Like start on Instagram, because I started doing it recently and it's like, for one, it's actually kind of fun. And then you get to connect with like fans and people and hang out. But it really, I feel like it helps a little bit.
Are you playing guitar or just asking questions?
Just hanging out. But yeah, mostly playing guitar, playing guitar and then like answering like maybe like a Thanks. Like fan questions and stuff like that.
Yeah. I know there's a way to include ChatGPT in this show somehow. I don't know what the answer is yet, but have you ever used ChatGPT?
No.
No. Okay. So it's pretty much just like an AI chatbot. You can like ask it all sorts of stuff. I asked it, give me some information on Wolf and Bear, the band. I'm curious how accurate this is. Tell me like if this is like way off.
Okay.
So Wolf and Bear is a progressive rock band from Sacramento, California. The band was formed in 2014 and is currently composed of four members: singer-guitarist Jack Pinder, guitarist Tyler Watt, bassist Josh Unit, and drummer Ryan Kiefer.
Two guys aren't even. Yeah, I don't even.
No, okay.
No, sorry. I don't even know who those people are. But okay.
Yeah, yeah. I asked it to tell me who's in Ever Fourth, right? It was like, Nick Lorandi left the band in 2013 and was replaced by Nick Lorandi. It's like, okay.
Oh shit.
Never, new version. That means. Yeah, yeah. New version of myself. so intricate guitar work, including rock, jazz, post-hardcore. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Wolf and Bear released their debut EP, Every Story is a Ghost Story, in 2015.
No.
No?
we have an album called Everything is Going Gray, and it's like a full length in 2017. But okay.
Well, it was well received. The album, the EP that you didn't do, was well received. And then they released a 2018 called Throat in 2018.
I don't even.
So let's see. Wolf and Bear has toured extensively throughout the United States and Europe, sharing the stage with Dance Gavin Dance, Hail the Sun, and CNVar.
That part's true. Maybe not the Europe part.
Yeah. And they continue to write music that pushes the boundaries of what is possible in the rock genre. That's a kind of a cool comment on the end.
I like that. Yeah. It makes it sound awesome.
Yeah. Cool. So apparently Johnny Carson, however, I don't know how much we can trust this thing at this point, but it says Johnny Carson was also known to be a private and introverted person off camera. So whether this is even right or wrong, at least ChatGPT is agreeing with me. And you can use this thing for anything. Like, should I write simpler songs? Whether or not you should write simpler songs depends on your personal artistic vision and goals. Simplicity can sometimes be a very effective tool in songwriting, as it can help make the song more accessible to a wider audience and create a strong emotional connection with listeners. So, I mean, this thing is nuts because, like, this it's not pulling this from like a blog post. It's actually artificial intelligence and considering the question and doing the best it can to give you. I mean, you could say like, give me 5 healthy lunches, healthy lunch ideas. Look at that shit. Grilled chicken salad, veggie wrap, quinoa bowl.
Wow.
Yeah, this thing is pretty cool. So, should I try to get a Kiesel or mayonnaise guitar endorsement? Can be a great opportunity for a musician. However, it's important to carefully consider whether an endorsement is the right fit for you. Okay, so that's not really going to tell me.
That's general.
Yeah. What did we say? So what was one we did with Jesse on here? It was tell me a joke about a prog rock band. Okay, so this will be the last thing we do here. Why did the prog rock band break up? Because they couldn't agree on the time signature. That sucks.
Wow.
Is there even like a layer of like is there like metaphor here or analogy? Is there anything, or is it that's it? They couldn't agree on the time signature.
I wasn't even expecting that good of an answer, to be honest.
That's like the only one it has. I said to regenerate a response, and that was the only one. Show me an argument between a jazz musician and a metal musician. Here's an example argument between a jazz musician and a metal musician. Jazz musician, I don't get why metal musicians feel the need to play so fast all the time. It's like they're just trying to show off their technical skills instead of focusing on the music itself. Metal musician, what are you talking about? Technical ability is an essential part of metal music. It's what sets us apart from other genres and allows us to create such intense and intricate compositions. Oh, brother. Metal musician, emotion and feeling are important in metal too. Just because we play fast doesn't mean we don't put our hearts and souls into our music. Jazz musician, I could see your point, but I still think there's something special about the subtlety and sophistication of jazz. This is such a stupid conversation. I feel like this is the kind of conversation I used to entertain when I was like 22 and like had way too much to drink at a party. And I was like, you know what? I'm going to argue with this guy. And as I got older, I'm like, oh, jeez, I'm going to go home. All right, man. Anything you want to promote about your band and the music you're working on?
Yeah, we have a new album coming out this year, pretty soon. I don't know when we're getting it.
Wolf and Bear
together. Yes, Wolf and Bear, new album coming out. We're gonna do some music videos pretty soon, and then we'll be on tour a few times this year. But yeah,
Sweet. Let me know when you're in New York and I'll open for you.
Oh yeah. Honestly, dude.
if the tour promoter allows it, sometimes it's all about what they want, but keep me in mind if you're like Pennsylvania, New York, Massachusetts.
My favorite show of the last tour that we did was actually, we played Hammerstein Ballroom and
oh shit.
Yeah. That was like really cool.
Yeah, that's a cool place.
To the point where, like, when I walked out, like, people were like, yo, Louie, like, people, like, knew my name. I was like, what the hell?
What's going on here?
Yeah, it's really, really weird. I'm still getting kind of used to that.
Yeah. Cool, Louie. It was awesome having you on here. Well, I'm sure I'll catch you on Instagram or something, or see you live, hopefully. And, yeah, man, I'll catch you later.
Yeah, thanks for having me.